Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming, or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you are an author listening to today's interview and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details or contact us at pr@speakuptalkradio.com. And right now, I have a returning guest with me. He is Dr. John R. Patrick. John is president of Attitude LLC and former vice president of internet technology at IBM, where he worked for 35 years. John was vice president of marketing for the launch of the IBM ThinkPad brand. In addition to holding a doctorate in healthcare administration, John has degrees in electrical engineering, management, and law. He has more than 4 decades of experience in business and 10 years serving on the board of a hospital. Described as one of the leading internet visionaries, he has authored 3 books. In the book titled Health Attitude, Unraveling and Solving the Complexities of Healthcare, he takes his visionary view and applies it to the world of healthcare, predicting its path. In his book, Net Attitude, What It Is, How to Get It, and Why It Is More Important Than Ever, he accurately predicted the evolution of the internet and its impact on the worlds of business, technology, politics, education, and popular culture. And in the book titled Election Attitude, he applies the principles of net attitude to registration and voting. John lives in Danbury, Connecticut and Palm Coast, Florida with his wife, Joanne, and his website is attitudellc.org. And today we are going to focus on his book, Election Attitude, How Internet Voting Leads to a Stronger Democracy. So let's bring him on. Welcome to the network, John.
Thanks, Pat. It's nice to be here again.
Yes, I should say welcome back. Well, now, you and I touched on this book during our first interview, and there was just so much left to talk about. Plus, after having just witnessed the election of a lifetime, we really need to think about and further the conversation about how we vote. So your book, Election Attitude, exposes problems in America's system and unveils the next wave forward for voting. And I'd like to set the stage as just one example, I'm sure, of how our current voting process leaves many unable or unwilling to vote, what we call lost votes. If you would, retell your story about how and why you couldn't vote this year.
Well, I had what I thought was a unique situation, but it turned out not to be so unique. And that is that I voted by mail as an absentee voter in the state of Florida. And because of the hurricane, they had a delay in mailing out the ballots. And because of an extended trip that I was making, I didn't actually get the ballot until Election Day. And, of course, there wasn't time to return it back to the precinct in Florida in time to get it counted. Unfortunately, things like this happen to very large numbers of people. Hundreds of thousands of people mail in their ballot and think it gets counted. But if they forgot to sign the envelope on the outside, which is required, the vote doesn't count. If they sign it as John Q. Smith, but the registration database has John Quincy Smith, that vote doesn't count. So it's not a very precise or accurate system that we have with the mail. But there are many other problems with our election system.
Yes, and we'll get into those in a little bit. So why are you so passionate about this?
Well, honestly, as recently as January of this year, I knew absolutely nothing about this topic. I really didn't. And in fact, I was working on another attitude book called Home Attitude, which will be about home automation, which is one of my hobbies. And I was telling a lawyer friend of mine about it. And he said, John, it sounds really interesting, but you know what would be even more interesting? Why don't you write a book called Election Attitude? I think you'll find there's a lot of meat there, my friend said. Well, I said, I really don't know anything about it, but that's an interesting idea. Let me take a look. So I started just searching around a little bit about registration and voting, and it didn't take long to find out that it was indeed a very interesting and complex subject. And I thought that healthcare was complicated, which of course it is, but I would say elections and voting and registration is at least as complicated. Mm-hmm. So the more I learned about it, the more passionate I became about how there could be a better way. And having had many years in involvement with the beginnings of the internet and knowing a little bit about it, it was sort of obvious to me that, well, why can't we vote on the internet? And I found out there is a lot of opposition to it, to my surprise. So that's what the book is about, is what are all the problems and how could internet voting, you know, can we do it? How could we do it and make it secure and private? And what would be the benefits if we did?
Mm-hmm. All right. Before we get into the benefits and maybe some of the disadvantages of it, explain the process that you suggest, because I'm sure as people are listening to this for the very first time and thinking about internet voting, they're probably thinking of something like getting their health care online and thinking, oh, my gosh. So maybe explain what you see as the process.
Well, I think it could be actually very simple. Not quite as simple as signing up for an Amazon account and buying something and having it delivered tomorrow. That's sort of the ultimate in simplicity, which they have perfected. But e-commerce is actually a bit simpler than voting. The reason that it's simpler is that if there's some element of fraud, for example, if you steal my credit card or somehow break into my Amazon account and you buy something, I will see that transaction. It'll pop up on my bank statement or my Amazon account, and I would challenge it and would be able to get it reversed. However, if you broke into my system that I was using to vote, and if you somehow were able to change my vote, I might not ever know. And that's what makes internet voting a little bit more complicated. But we've done a lot of complicated solutions in our world. Incredibly complicated things have been solved. And I'm quite confident internet voting can be made simple, can be made private, can be made secure, and can be made verifiable. At a high level, the way it would work is that you would go online to your particular voting precinct, whether it's in Atlanta or New York or Dallas or wherever it might be, and you would make a request to register. Or if you're already registered, you would have the ability to update your information. Perhaps you moved, which, by the way, is one of the reasons many votes don't get counted, because people move, but the database didn't get updated, and so they didn't match, and so they couldn't vote. So you would verify that your address is correct, and then you would say, you know, I would like to vote. The voting precinct would send you a secure email, and in that email would be a code. And when it's time to vote, you would go to the voting site. You would log in with the credentials that had been given to you. You would enter that code, and you would be able to vote. You would then get some confirmation that that vote was received and that it was properly counted, and you would get a receipt that says, okay, you voted, and here's how you voted, and, you know, thanks for voting. It could be that simple.
Mm-hmm. It really could be that simple. And I want to talk about that. The United States ranks number 31 out of the leading 34 developed countries in voter participation. And one of the reasons for the low turnout is out-of-date system for voting. Physically going to a polling place is an old-fashioned idea to millennials. Driving to the poll is similar to looking up a phone number in a phone book. Many younger people simply will not and do not get their information that way. So what do you do, though, when you still have a large voting demographic that still loves the act of physically showing up to vote, or who may not have or choose to use the internet? What happens to them?
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of people say that voting is a social thing and it's such a joy to go to the precinct and talk with your neighbors. And I really find that to be, that's not an excuse for why we should have such a difficult, old-fashioned system. I'm sure it's true for some people, but for many more people, other scenarios are the reality. For example, people who are disabled and can't get to the poll, people who are in the military or who work overseas for a private company. In theory, they can vote, but they have to do it the old-fashioned way with paper ballots, and most of those votes don't count, and people in the military have learned over the years to don't bother, because your vote's probably not going to get there in time, and it's not going to count. And then we have these polling places. In some states, they're closing polling places to save money, because it's expensive to maintain that old-fashioned system. And so they tell people on a website, or they might send out a mailing to say, your precinct has been moved. Well, that's not a big deal to some people, but to a lot of people, they don't know how to get to that place. And they go to the old place, and they see a sign on the door that says, you know, we moved. And they don't have a car. They can't get to the new place. So, or the weather could be bad, or they could be ill, or there's just so many reasons why people can't vote. In the election this year that we just had this month, our population since the last election in 2012 grew by 11 million, and the number of registered voters actually increased almost 50 million due to an all-out push by both parties to get more people to register. It worked. So there were 47 million more registered voters, but the number of people who actually voted declined by about 5 million. Mm-hmm. So why is that? Well, some people say that they didn't like either candidate, so they said, to heck with it, I'm not going to vote. I'm sure there's some people that felt that way, but there are many, many more people that had real issues. And the number one issue is getting to the polling place.
I'm glad you said that, because I was going to ask, why do you think that so many people simply don't choose to vote? I mean, is it the process? Is the process the reason, or is it the party system, or the candidate choices, or just a combination of all of it?
Well, there is some of that. I mean, I know for certain there are some people who said, I'm fed up. I don't like the two-party system. I don't like either candidate. I don't like the government. I'm not going to vote. But I don't think that's that many people in that category. Some people voted for Hillary not because they liked her, but because they didn't want to give a vote to Trump. And some people voted for Trump not because they liked him, but because they didn't want Hillary to get the vote. So it's I think most of the people would vote if it was easy to vote. And it's just not easy to vote in this country. It is not a pleasure to drive to a polling place and take time off of work. Some people have to take care of their kids or their parents. Some employers don't let people off of work. Sometimes it's really difficult to get to the polling place from where a person works instead of where they live, which is where the polling place is. There's just a lot of barriers that are in the way. Why can't we just curl up in our chair with our iPhone and vote in the privacy of our home, and not have any other pressures on us?
No, that's true, because if you think about it, the internet has really permeated almost every aspect of our lives except for voting. With that, why don't you draw some parallels between technology and the past skepticisms that people had, such as shopping online or healthcare online, banking online, where people said, oh, no, that's never going to happen.
Yeah, well, there are a lot of issues with the healthcare system, and in particular with electronic health records. It's been very, very difficult. However, more than half of people now have electronic health records. People do use them. They're getting used to it. Doctors are getting used to it. It is secure. It's private. It works. It was more complicated to get to this point than it was for shopping. And we frankly have a long way to go, but we're headed down the right path. E-commerce last year was $340 billion, about 7% of everything bought online. But that number is growing very rapidly. I think we're going to be amazed at how big that number is this year. So we know how to do this, but in the case of voting, there are so many objections. Interestingly enough, coming from technical people, one of the objections is about coercion. So when I just gave the simple scenario, I curl up in my chair in the privacy of my home to vote, and they say, yeah, and your husband or your wife is standing there with a gun at your head telling you how to vote, or a neighbor or your employer or for somebody coercing you to vote in a certain way. frankly, I think that's very unlikely, but of course it is possible. The answer, however, is pretty simple. If I do a yes, dear, and vote in a certain way, you know, then I go outside and take a walk around the block with my iPhone and vote again. And the last vote counts. You can vote as many times as you want electronically, and the last one counts.
That would have been very interesting in this year's election when Comey leak came out toward the end of the campaign where people had already voted early who maybe thought, oh, well, maybe I'd change my vote. Well, I mean, how do you do that?
Yeah, right. A very good point. You know, the idea of early voting is designed to take some of the pressure off the long lines.
Mm-hmm.
It really, to me, it makes no sense whatsoever. It's like, well, we have long lines at the store. So, you know, we're going to tell people that they can, you know, they should buy what they need a week earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I mean, it's silly to do that. And as you said, issues can come up right up to the last minute. And people have already voted and they can't vote again.
Mm-hmm.
With internet voting, they could vote again.
Exactly.
And you would not have to have early voting. The voting window would be open, could be for, let's say, 12 hours.
Right.
And 12 hours would be plenty of time to let everybody vote, no matter where in the world they might be. And need for a recount would not exist because the results would be instantly achievable. You know, some of the results from the election of November 8th of this year still are not in.
Right.
The paper ballots that are in piles that people have to count. And now they have this ridiculous thing going on to do a recount, which they're going to give them more than 2 weeks to complete. Can you imagine if it took Amazon 2 weeks to add up your orders?
No.
You know, it's insane. A recount should take about 5 minutes at most.
Right. This whole situation does nothing to unify people. There's a whole financial side involved. It's insane.
You know, it really is. And, you know, unfortunately, we continue to see a lot of things about hacking and about voter fraud. And in my research for Election Attitude, I looked quite a bit into this question of fraud. And, you know, what I found was a lot of stories about fraud, a lot of them. But in terms of a case where the outcome of an election was actually changed as a result of fraud, no cases. I couldn't find any. And I looked at the research that other people had done very extensive research, looking at billions of votes and looking for irregularities. And there aren't any. The idea of millions of people who illegally voted, extremely unlikely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if there's some discrepancy when you show up at the poll and you have to get what they call a provisional ballot, you have to sign that ballot and say, you know, I am a citizen, and I understand that if I say something improper on this form, that it's a felony. It's not a simple slap on the wrist. It's a felony. You know, it's like robbing a bank or shooting somebody. It's a really serious crime to lie about anything related to voting. So I just don't believe it's the case. It's mostly stories that are started by people who lost an election.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly. And the whole thing has become a big distraction at this point.
Right.
So we know that the elections are run by state and by precinct. Will there be some standardization under your scenario?
Yeah, well, that's a really, really important question, Pat. The Constitution made it very clear that the states have the ball. All the states independently decide how their registration system is going to work and how their voting system is going to work. When it comes to the presidential election, they can't change the date. They have to deliver the votes on the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November. But otherwise, whether they want to use a paper ballot or throw a coin in a bucket or have an electronic machine or internet voting or however they want to do it is up to the states. And many of the states further delegate that down to the counties. We're even down into townships. We have about 100,000 places in America that you can vote spread across 10,000 voting jurisdictions. And there's a lot of variation. I would say that's a good thing. And the reason I say that is there is no central point to be attacked.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike healthcare.gov, for example, mm-hmm. which is a single service, a single website trying to meet the complex needs of 50 states. It really, in my opinion, shouldn't be done that way. So with voting, it's going to be done, controlled by the states. They will do it in different ways. However, in answer to your question about standards, it's pretty likely that there will be standards. I mean, the basic standard is the internet. And the internet works exactly the same in every state and every county, in fact, every place, everywhere in the world. There are no variations. There will be some differences. Some states will pick a vendor who has a smartphone solution for voting. Another state may pick a web-based approach only, where you have to have a PC. Some of them will allow voters to go to the library if they or to a local place to get some assistance. Some states will decide to continue the old way for those people who just don't want anything to do with electronics, so they don't trust it. But frankly, over time, people will find that they should trust internet voting more than they trust the system we have today, not because of fraud, not because of hacking, but because of inaccuracies in paper-based, old-fashioned systems, machines that don't work properly, long lines, and these many, many problems that happen at the polls.
Sure, there's so much room for error.
Yeah.
As it stands today.
There is a lot of error. So that was the disturbing thing about the decision to do this recount, implying that the electronic voting machines, that there was something, maybe that those machines were rigged somehow.
Right.
The reason behind the recount. Well, I would say the odds are much higher that there were errors in the paper-based mm-hmm. systems, the mail-in ballots, and incorrect data in the registration database that prevented a legitimate voter from voting because of a simple clerical error in the database.
Sure, you have all these people counting manually, and you've got long hours of doing that and looking at the same thing over and over. You obviously are going to have some human error.
Yeah, exactly. The other thing is that if we had internet voting, not only would it be more accurate and be more convenient and enable people overseas to vote just the same as if they were at home, but in addition to those really significant benefits, we could do other kinds of voting, and we could really improve the democracy that we have. You know, a two-party system with two candidates able to amass $1 billion worth of backing, you might argue that's not really a democracy. You know, that favors money. It favors organizations that can be huge. It's very difficult for an independent voter to have any chance, independent candidate, rather, to have any chance. But with internet voting, we could do something different. It's called ranked choice voting, RCV, ranked choice voting. And under that scheme, you don't just pick Donald or Hillary. You rank your choices. You might say, my first choice is Jill Stein because I like the environment. My second choice is Hillary, or my second choice is Donald, or my second choice is Ted Cruz. Or any, it could be 8 or 9 candidates that would more accurately reflect our citizenry. You know, we're not all just a Democrat or just a Republican. There's a lot of shades of Republicans and a lot of shades of Democrats as well. So with ranked choice voting, we would just say first choice, second choice, third choice, and so on. And then we would have what's called an instant runoff. And whoever came in eighth place, let's say we had 8 candidates, that person, of course, would be out. But then the people who voted for that candidate, number 8, also had a second choice and a third choice and a fourth choice. So those votes then would be reallocated among the remaining 7. And then you take the person in 7th place, and they would be out of the race, but you would take those votes and reallocate them to their those voters' second, third, fourth, fifth choices, et cetera. And you roll that up to the top, and some really great things happen. Number one, you're assured of somebody getting more than 50%. It's guaranteed. It can't be any other way mathematically. Number two, the candidates would be less likely to attack each other as they do today. I mean, we all saw this brutal attacks coming really from most all the candidates at some point during the election season. They wouldn't do that when those people that were voting for someone other than yourself may make you the second choice. So you don't want to irritate them by attacking their first choice because you might be the beneficiary of getting their second choice vote. And lastly, another thing that happens is we get a result that is more reflective of democracy. It's more of what the people, how they really feel. If we had done that this time, I have no idea who would have won. It might have been the same outcome, might not have been. It might have been something surprising. I don't know. But I do know that it would be more accurate reflection of how our citizenry feels.
What you're saying is then that online voting can really capture what the people really think instead of being forced to pick this or that when they really didn't want to pick either. It's definitely more reflective of what their choices are.
Yeah, exactly. And once we have internet voting widely available, there's a number of other things that can happen. For example, random choice voting, which is a way of polling. I mean, why is it that we only get to express our point of view about the presidency every 4 years?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we could give some input a little more frequently. Now, we do that today through polls. But, you know, polls are really kind of an old-fashioned idea, too. The idea of calling people and, you know, mm-hmm. do you mind, I know it's your dinner hour, but do you have 5 minutes to answer some questions? A lot of people just immediately hang up. But most people today entering into the community of old enough to vote, they don't have landline phones. And the federal law does not allow pollers to call a cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
So polling is really becoming more and more inaccurate. We saw that in this current election. We saw it in Brexit in Europe. I think it's pretty well established now that polling is not accurate.
Mm-hmm.
But with internet voting, it could be by just randomly picking 1,000 people in the country, you could get a statistically accurate point of view. This is not to elect the president I'm talking about. This is to say, well, what do you think about medical marijuana?
Mm-hmm.
Or what do you think about capital punishment? Or any number of, or healthcare, or you know, any number of topics, you could get some really valid, statistically, scientifically backed up points of view of how people feel about things, and that would be really great information for our political leaders to have.
Absolutely, wow, it's kind of a no-brainer. What about the cost? Is there any cost involved above and beyond what the cost is currently?
Well, nobody, to my knowledge, has done a complete financial modeling of this. But, you know, when you look at the system we have with these machines, $3.9 billion of machines were installed in 2002 after the Florida debacle of 2000. Almost $4 billion went into upgrading the system. That was 15 years ago. And of course, we know the inefficiency, all these problems that we talked about. The internet's already there, so we don't have to build an internet. We don't have to build an infrastructure to transmit the votes. We do have to do a lot of work on security and privacy and verifiability and to make sure the infrastructure is strong enough to protect against hacking and to protect against these what they call distributed denial of service attacks that shut down servers. This happens from time to time. So, but we know how to do those things, and there are a number of vendors who have the technology, who are perfecting it. It's been tested in Arizona, West Virginia, Utah. It was tested by the military. There are no problems in any of these tests that have occurred so far. One company in Ohio called Votem, V-O-T-E-M, like Mary, Votem, they have developed a solution for voting using smartphones with the internet and a technology called blockchain. Blockchain technology is what's used for Bitcoin, the digital currency. It's never been hacked. It's secure, encrypted, private. And it's a very, in my opinion, the best way to store and maintain the integrity of a vote. So there's a lot that needs to be done. We know it's going to happen eventually, but my passion here is let's not wait until it eventually happens 20 years from now. Why can't we make it happen for 2020 and have a much higher voter participation? I think this would be a real strengthening of our democracy, and people would feel good about it.
So what will it take for this to happen?
Well, that's why I wrote the book. You know, I'm hoping that some election officials and politicians read this and say, wow, you know, he's right. We can do this. Let's start a pilot. There's nobody that's ready to just turn the switch for 2018 and have widespread internet voting. It's definitely going to take some time. But as I mentioned, several states have done tests that were very successful. By the way, when Utah did a test in March of this year, they had Mormon missionaries who were citizens of Utah who voted from 45 different countries where they are serving as missionaries. Can you imagine that? From 45 different countries, yet our military servicemen in Iraq and Afghanistan don't vote
right,
because they are reliant on an old-fashioned system. So what's it going to take to get it going? It's going to take a state that buys into this vision. It's going to take vendors who, such as the one I mentioned in Ohio, they've presented their technology to the Federal Election Assistance Commission, which has to approve voting systems. It's not federally controlled, but they do provide a service to review voting systems to make sure that they're valid. That's kind of they sort of help the states. Although a lot of people think we don't really need the federal government to do that. The states can do that testing on their own. But anyway, that's what it's going to take. It's going to be the convergence of political will, technical will, election voters, and good vendors that can build and support the technology.
Once there is a successful pilot rolled out and people see how easy it is, I'm going to imagine it'll catch on like wildfire. So,
yeah, like you alluded to earlier about the millennials, you know, I'm sure they must think it's kind of silly mm-hmm. that they can do just about everything from their iPhone or Android phone except vote.
Yeah.
And maybe it hasn't occurred to them, but I think if you would be able to get the statistics, and we'll have them a few months from now about the age distribution of people who voted, I suspect that we're going to find that millennials, as a percentage of the population, voted less than people that are older.
Mm-hmm. That's why I asked that question at the top and kind of equated it to the phone book, because I think of my own household here. My husband goes to the phone book. We have 2003 phone book that's left over from somewhere, and he goes to that to look things up. I'm like, why are you looking in that?
Right.
Not that he's that much older than me, but it just occurred to me there's some people that just aren't going to grab onto this. So what call to action would you like to suggest to anyone listening today?
Well, if they're intrigued at all by this subject, I would certainly urge them to take a look at Election Attitude. It's not that long of a book. It's easy to read. It's non-technical. I wrote it for the layman to be able to understand it. It's available on the Kindle. It's available through Audible. I had a great producer that read the book and made the Audible version of it. And of course, it's also available in print. So that would be a good place to start. And they can either just go to Amazon and search for Election Attitude, or just visit johnpatrick.com johnpatrick, johnpatrick.com. And they'll see all three of my books there, actually.
Excellent. johnpatrick.com. Well, now, before we wrap up, is there anything we missed that you would like to talk about today?
Well, I think we covered the important points. A lot of this is about attitude, and I urge everyone who has a point of view about this, you know, ask your election workers, why can't we vote online? And when they say, oh, because of hackers and because of security, they should challenge that. You know, we know how to do these things. We did it with electronic commerce back in 1993. People said it would never work. You'd never be able to do transactions on the internet. But look where we are now. And that's what's going to happen with internet voting. And the sooner we do it, the sooner we'll have a stronger democracy.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for your work on this. I think it's extremely important. I know there's a lot of folks that maybe hadn't thought about this. And so I'm going to encourage everyone to head over to your website, johnpatrick.com, and get a copy of your book and start paying attention to this and start having conversations with other folks. John, what a pleasure to have you back. I was looking forward to this, especially after our recent election, and I want to shed some light on what currently happened and how we might be able to improve it. And I think you did just that. Thank you so much.
Oh, it was a pleasure, Pat. Thank you.